All right. Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're looking at a Supreme Court case. And
Ooh, fun.
yeah, one that really goes deep into labor law and the whole back and forth of power between the feds and the states.
Yeah.
Machinists v. Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, 1976.
Ooh, okay.
We've been digging through tons of briefs, legal analyses, you know, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to bring you the important bits.
Yeah.
Really, what we're after here is understanding why this case, even back in 76,
right,
still matters today, especially for anybody, you know, learning about labor and employment law.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So maybe to start, what even kicked off this whole legal fight in the first place?
Well, at the heart of it, you've got this clash between Lodge 76, part of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, right? And the Kearney and Tricker Corporation over in Wisconsin. Their collective bargaining agreement, it had expired back in June 71. So they're trying to hammer out a new one. But these negotiations, they drag on for like over a year.
Wow.
And a big sticking point, and this is really key to the whole case, was the employer wanting to change the work week.
Oh, right? So like how many hours?
Exactly. They wanted to go from a 37.5 hour week to a 40 hour week and mess with the overtime rules too.
So a pretty huge disagreement about just the very basics of how much people are working and when.
Exactly.
All of that.
Exactly.
So how did the union push back against that?
So to turn up the heat, right, during these talks that were going nowhere, the union members, they all decided, okay, we're not working any overtime past our 37.5 hours.
Hmm.
That was their tactic, a concerted refusal of overtime, and that's what really lands this whole thing in court.
So a very strategic way of applying that pressure.
Very targeted.
Now, the company obviously didn't just sit back and take this. They went on the offensive, legally speaking.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is they went after this on both the federal and state levels at the same time.
Right. Exactly. Kearney and Trucker, they filed charges with, get this, two separate bodies. First, the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB.
Yeah, the federal one.
Right, the federal level. But then also with the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, the WORKUS, at the state level. And here's where it gets interesting. The NLRB, they actually dismiss the charges. They're basically saying, look, this union refusing overtime, it's not something federal law specifically says is okay or not okay.
So the NLRB is like, this isn't really our problem.
Not our jurisdiction. But then you've got the state agency with a whole different take.
So what did the state say?
The WORKUS sides with the employer. They say, no, this coordinated refusal to work overtime, that's an unfair labor practice under Wisconsin law. So they slap the union with a cease and desist order. Basically, you got to stop doing this.
Wow.
And that right there, that's your clash. The feds are hands off and the state's stepping right in.
That's a huge conflict. And this is exactly what, after the Wisconsin courts upheld the WORKUS ruling, pushed the case all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, right? Oh. So it really boils down to who gets to call the shots in these kind of labor disputes, the feds or the states?
Right. It's all about federal preemption under the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA.
Okay.
The big question is, can states regulate tactics that the NLRA doesn't specifically say are okay or not okay? Like it's this legal gray area.
Right.
This idea of an unregulated zone, that's crucial for understanding the Supreme Court's decision here.
So unregulated zone, that sounds important. Where does that idea even come from in labor law? What's the legal backing for this hands-off approach by the feds?
The groundwork for all of this comes from what we call the Garmin preemption doctrine that came out of San Diego Building Trades Council v. Garmin. It essentially says that when Congress passes a big comprehensive law, like the NLRA for labor relations, it's not just about what they specifically say is allowed or banned.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes their silence is intentional. Like they're saying, we're leaving this area to be worked out through negotiations and economic pressure. The states can't step on those toes.
Interesting. So it's not just about what the law actually says, but also about what it doesn't say.
Exactly. And this whole idea, it got even stronger in NLRB v. Insurance Agents International Union. The court decided there that some ways of putting on the pressure, even if they cause a bit of disruption, are just part of the game.
Right, like the tools of the trade.
Exactly. So this all really backed up the machinists' union's argument. They were saying, look, refusing to work overtime, that's just us using one of those tools.
It's within those bounds.
Right. It's within those bounds that are federally protected.
Okay. So we've got this legal foundation that says federal law carves out space for these tactics. How did the Supreme Court apply that to this specific case?
The court sided with the union in a 7-2 decision. Justice Brennan wrote the opinion.
Right.
They lean hard on this zone of free bargaining idea. They said the union refusing overtime, that was a legal way to help themselves, and it fell right in that zone Congress meant to leave alone. When Wisconsin tried to stop them, they were interfering with that freedom, that balance that Congress was going for.
So the states can't just jump in and change the rules of the game that Congress set up.
Exactly. And there's this great line from Justice Brennan's opinion. Congress struck the balance between the uncontrolled power of management and labor.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right. It gets to the heart of the NLRA. It's not about dictating every single thing, but creating a framework for fair bargaining.
And this wasn't just a straightforward application of existing law. The court actually overruled one of its own previous decisions, right?
Yeah.
One that had allowed state regulation of similar union activities.
Yeah, that's a really important part of this. They overturned International Union, UAW, AFL, Local 232 v. Wisconsin Employment Relations Board.
Yep.
Usually hear it called the Briggs-Stratton case. Cool. That was back in 49. It said states could regulate certain things unions did that were disruptive, like those on-again, off-again strikes. But in Machinists, they said, nope, Briggs-Stratton got it wrong. It didn't get the whole picture of federal preemption. That was a big shift.
So Machinists is drawing a very clear line in the sand. But the decision wasn't unanimous, right?
Not quite. We had concurrences and dissents that bring up some interesting nuances.
What were those alternative perspectives?
Justice Powell, he agreed with the outcome, that Wisconsin couldn't interfere. But he wrote separately to emphasize that states still have their own powers, what he called neutral laws.
So things that apply to everyone, not just unions.
Right. Like laws against trespassing or damaging property, those still apply in labor disputes.
So the states aren't totally powerless.
Exactly. They can step in if things get illegal, but not just to try to control the bargaining process.
Okay, that's an important distinction. Now, what about the dissent? How did they see things differently?
Justice Stevens, he wrote the dissent, and Justice Rehnquist joined him. They argued that Congress wasn't clear enough in its intent to shut out states on this specific type of tactic.
So they took a more literal approach to the NLRA.
Right. They were concerned that the majority was reading too much into what Congress didn't say and limiting the state's power too much.
Interesting. So we've got these different interpretations. But overall, the Machinist case sets up a pretty clear principle. How do courts actually figure out in later cases if a state regulation goes too far? Is there like a specific test?
Machinist didn't lay out a brand new test with steps and all that, but it did make a central question even more important. That question is, does the state law mess with the NLRA's process? Basically, would letting the state do this upset the balance of power that the whole point of the NLRA is to protect? That's the key for courts when looking at preemption in labor law.
So it's less about checking boxes and more about looking at the big picture.
Right, the overall impact.
So stepping back a bit, what's the lasting significance of Machinists v. WRC? Why does it still matter in labor law today?
It's huge for a few reasons. First, it really drives home this idea of federal supremacy when it comes to labor law. States can't just make their own rules when Congress has already set up a system.
It's a reminder that labor relations in the U.S. are primarily a federal matter.
Exactly. Second, Machinists emphasizes how important it is to maintain that balance of power between labor and management. States can't tilt the scales in favor of one side or the other.
So that means both unions and employers have to be aware of what tactics they can and can't use.
Right. And finally, this case really secures that zone of free bargaining. States can't interfere with those economic weapons, those tactics that both sides use in negotiations.
And Machinists made it clear that overturning that precedent in Briggs-Stratton was a big deal. It really solidified the federal government's role in all this.
Absolutely. So for you as someone studying labor law, understanding Machinists is crucial. It tells you where the lines are drawn between federal and state power, and it explains why some things unions and employers do are off limits for state regulation. It's really a framework for understanding how labor disputes work in this country.
So a lot to think about. And here's something else to consider. The world of work has changed so much since 1976. How do the principles from Machinists apply to tactics we didn't even have back then?
Right. Like what about online activism or social media campaigns?
Does that zone of free bargaining cover those new ways of putting on the pressure? Could there be arguments for states to step in there?
That's a great question. It really shows how relevant this case still is.
It's a question that'll keep evolving as the workplace evolves. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Machinists v. WERC. It's a case that continues to shape how we understand labor law today.